This intro story comes out of Press Start and was written by Kieran Verbruggen. So someone's already beaten Baldur's Gate 3 in only 10 minutes. And the speedrunner by the name of May, who set that world record, has set another record. Right underneath that video, May also drops another hot run, this time swapping out the any percent game completion goal for a far more titillating sex percent challenge. That's right, folks. Trying to get the quickest time from go to woe and see how fast they can get freaky with one of the game's characters. The running question right here, once again, was from May, shows them reaching carnal satisfaction in another record-setting 8 minutes from the start of the game, climaxing in them rubbing naughties with Githyanki fighter Lazel.
Ooh.
I'm sure that means a lot too.
I'm about to say, I know what Githyankis are.
Hey. Drew, people speedrunning, getting their bang on in Baldur's Gate 3. What are your thoughts here?
Oh, look, good on them. Like, I feel like in real life, it's all about taking your time, making sure your partner's enjoying himself. But in video games, you get to live your fantasy life in Baldur's Gate 3 and go as quick as you want, like 8 minutes. That might be good for some people. I'm not quite sure, but you've got to have a little bit more stamina than that, especially since it's such a big game. But it is what it is. I'd like to see a natural run where someone takes as long as possible.
Make sure.
You know, I want a run which is like, it took me 200 hours just to get this romance level to whatever it is in Baldur's Gate 3. So that is, and that's a,
we are committed.
That's a performer.
Oh dear, yeah, I've definitely been known to do a speed run here or there in my time.
Did you submit it online? See if anybody could beat you, or
no? I didn't time it. I didn't have anyone there watching from Guinness World Records, which I really probably should have with my amazing performances I've put in over the years. Anthony, when you pick up Baldur's Gate 3, are you going to be doing a sexy speed run?
It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, maybe, because I'm curious. Because, like, yeah, 8 minutes. Surely I can cut that down. Surely we can get quicker than that. 8 minutes is too long. This needs to be a very quick approach. We need to be able to get into the pants and get out of the pants in like 5 minutes tops. Yeah. We got to speed this process up. It's taking too long.
Don't worry about it. In one month's time, it'll be one click of the mouse. You'll be done.
Hello and welcome to News to Reviews, your place to be for gaming news stories, and also your place to be for impressions on the latest games coming out each and every week. My name is Zach. I'm here with my co-host Anthony.
It's me again.
Anthony's filling in for Lockie this week.
Yay.
Thank you so much for being here once again, Anthony.
That's all right. Glad to be here. Once again, I am slowly eating away at Lockie's airtime. Soon it'll just be me. There won't even be a Zach around. This is my podcast now.
Just one day, we'll just won't even bother mentioning Lockie, and you'll just have fully usurped him. We'll just act like he never existed. He was never on the show. No, Lockie will be back next week, everyone. Never fear. But yeah, thank you once again, Anthony, for filling in for him. It's always fun having you on the show, but it's going to be an extra fun show this week because we have the one and only Drew from the House of Mario Nintendo podcast. Drew, how you doing, man?
Going well. Thank you very much for having me, Zach. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Really excited to talk about a lot more sexual gaming topics. I don't know. Bloody hell. Straight off the bat. I'm getting sweaty already. Lucky I turned off the heater for the podcast, because I would have been sweating the whole time, just dabbing the forehead like a... Oh, geez Louise.
That's how we do it over here at News to Reviews. You get your facts, you get your information, but it's also delivered to you in this sexy, sexy package. Mm-mm.
Yeah, unbeknownst to the viewers at home, we're all naked right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, bit of a... That's me slapping my thigh. Just a bit of ASMR out there for you as well.
About to say.
Oh, dear me. Drew, thanks so much for being here. I absolutely love your podcast, and I'm stoked to see that you're back behind the microphone again, putting out episodes. But for people who are unfamiliar, please tell them all about it.
Yeah, I'm a host of The House of Mario, a Nintendo podcast recorded in the southeast of South Australia. And it's all about Nintendo and talking about the latest and greatest and even the retro side of, you know, one of the most beloved companies in gaming and also one of the most hated, depending on who you are or what mood you're in. Sometimes I'm definitely in that mood too. They do some weird Nintendo decisions every now and again.
Oh, yes.
But, for the most part, you know, I grew up on Nintendo, so absolutely I love a lot of their franchises. And I do sort of lean more towards portable gaming. Especially now having a young kid. So the Switch is always a lifesaver when it comes to completing some games. Even though sometimes I'm looking at the PlayStation, I'm like, should I buy it there? I would like some trophies. I would like some trophies. But that also comes with some anxiety when I just don't even get 50% of them. I'm like, why do I even bother? But anyway.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about the trophy hunting. Don't you worry. I'm kind of glad they haven't brought achievements or trophies to Nintendo, because I don't want that obsession to get any worse. But I absolutely love your podcast. It is the only Nintendo podcast that I listen to. Your passion for Nintendo is absolutely palpable. And it's always super fun and entertaining. I'm digging the sleepover podcast that you're doing as well, getting the guests on and just sort of getting real personal and chatting about passion for video games and whatnot. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, thank you. Because my podcast, it's a solo podcast, so it's just me after my co-host left just for, you know, life reasons, got two kids and work and all that. It was hard to line up schedules. So I decided to make it just a solo podcast so then I could just record it whenever I needed to, now that I'm a father as well. And I really enjoy solo podcasting, but my God, I miss talking to people. I miss doing what you boys do each week. And I have a lot of friends, whether it's across Australia or even on the other side of the world, thanks to podcasting. I'm like, I really miss these people. I just need some time to have a chat with them. And, as we get along at PAX and that, Zach, you know, we just don't make the time to have a phone call. So we've got to do a podcast. So I thought the same thing. Let's get some people sleeping over. Let's get the sleeping bags out and have some people sleep over. It's been great just catching up with people. It's a great excuse just to bring people on. And it's been good. It's been a lot of fun. We've had some great guests so far, just geeking out about Nintendo. And there's one coming up where we talk about a lot of other things. So we're just sort of just to have some fun with it. But, yeah, no, it's been great.
Oh, fan-bloody-tastic. All of Drew's links will be in the description of the podcast down below. And Anthony, you also have a podcast where you talk to people about things.
I do. And we finally released the fucking episode.
Oh, I can't forget to talk
only
about
took
it.
A billion years to get The Last of Us out. So you can go and check that out over at What Do You Think About This, wherever good podcasts are found. You can also find us on Twitter at WDYTATpod. You can throw us any questions or any concerns about the podcast, about our release schedule. That all comes through the Twitter. Just contact us on the Twitter and we'll sort you out.
Really take him up on that. Ask him any question.
Really?
Like, where's my pots and pans? I need to cook this rice and I can't find them.
Oh, where are they?
I live with Anthony. He might know. Who knows?
Have you looked under the sink?
Look behind you. It's just me with all the pots.
Ah!
Look, I'm sorry I took so long to well, we had to get you on the podcast for it to be brought up because I kept forgetting that that episode's out. But I was on it as well.
Yes.
You talk about Last of Us, and it was really fun, and you should go and check out that episode. All of those links will be in the description of the podcast down below, as well as Drew's links, and then also news to reviews links. But if you like What Do You Think About This, or if you like House of Mario, or if you like news to reviews, the best way you can help us out is by leaving us a rating or review wherever you happen to listen to the podcast. It takes barely any time, costs $0, and it really does help us get into the ears of more peeps out there and just makes us feel all warm and fuzzy on the inside. It's real good.
Mm.
It's real good. Hit
oh, dope God, ring. It's warm. Oh, so fuzzy. I love that feeling.
Oh, let's see if this news this week is warm and fuzzy. It's time for the gaming news. Don't know what that segue was.
Warm and fuzzy.
This article comes out of Engadget and was written by Chris Holt, a studio that handled Baldur's Gate 3's translations has apologized after outsourced workers were omitted from the game's credits. We take full responsibility for the omission of our freelancers' names and apologize for the effect that it had, Altagram Group founder and CEO Marie Amig said in a statement. We would like to thank Larian for allowing us to quickly fix that error and update the credit section. The names of the Brazilian Portuguese translators will be included in an upcoming patch to the game. Although the credits did not feature the translators Altagram worked with, they included the names of the company's executives and department leads. Mm. Contractors who translated Baldur's Gate 3 into languages other than Brazilian Portuguese were credited through different company, though different companies handled those localizations. Baldur's Gate 3 developer and publisher Larian Studios said Altagram was to blame for the oversight. It had asked the company to rectify the situation, and it seems Altagram swiftly obliged. Unfortunately, outsourced workers who contribute to games are not always fully credited for their work. That can impact their future prospects, as it makes it slightly more difficult to prove to potential employers that they worked on a given game. So I brought this up purely because it's a bit of a feel-good story here, which we don't always get when it comes to gaming news. You know, people weren't credited. Larian said, no, that's bad. We want them credited. And now they're being credited.
It's
a W in my books. Yeah. Drew, what do you think of how Larian handled this whole situation?
We've seen multiple sort of examples of this where I remember the last one I can remember pretty well was like the Metroid Prime remake on Switch where the original devs weren't credited for their work. It was just very much the team, the original team at Retro Studios. It was just written in the credits and their actual individual names weren't written. But this is the first time I've actually heard them go, oh, we missed someone. Oh, we'll update and put them in. Usually they just go, well, too bad. The credits are the credits and that's it.
Yeah. You can't patch that.
Yeah, can't patch the credits. We can patch this really just super sophisticated code that makes a video game work, but we can't add in some more text into the credits. That is beyond technology. So, yeah, it's great that they've been put in. Like, it's a little bit sad the oversight was there in the first place because it's really important that these devs are just recognized for their work. So if they want to go on to another job, if they're freelancers or whatever, they can point and go, I was in that game. I'm in the credits. It's very simple. Go, oh, that's great. You've done great work there. We can see and we'll give you another job. But it makes it hard if people are just fighting to get into the credits. So thank God for that. Mm. Good on you, Baldur's Gate 3.
But particularly for a game as beloved as what Baldur's Gate 3 has been, I think it's sitting at like 96 or 97 on Metacritic. Having that on your resume would be super, super handy. Mm-hmm. I was thinking back to when this has happened before. I believe Rockstar also did this with Red Dead Redemption 2. Now, their excuse was, you know, so many companies work on it. It's such a big game. It's like thousands upon thousands of people. They're like, we don't want an hour's worth of credits. But for me, I think, just put them in the credits. Most people don't sit through the credits anyway. So yeah. I think the least you can do is put people's names in there, even if it does end up going for an hour. You should credit whoever's worked on your thing. They deserve that. Yeah, Anthony, Larian.
Yeah.
Sticking up for people working on their game. What do you think?
Yeah, it's super great to see. Just Baldur's Gate refuses to miss, it seems, in any regard, even including crediting people. It's just, yeah, it's really good to see people who worked on the game get credited properly, and seemingly it was not Larian's fault, so also, yeah, not their fault either. What's interesting is, like, yeah, we brought up Metroid Prime and Rockstar. It kind of reminded me of how old video games used to work, where they would literally put fake names in the credits so people couldn't poach the developers, like the people who actually worked on games.
What?
Have you never heard of this? It's like really old. It probably hasn't happened for like over a decade or more. Probably like two or three decades now that I'm being honest. But in older arcade games, because developers were like, you know, if someone's like, oh, you worked on a super popular game, yoink, we're going to bring you over here and offer you more money. So it was a tactic by the higher ups to be like, stay with us and be paid less because we need you. It's a super common thing where if you look at like an old arcade game's credits, they're just fake names. They're just always like something like Johan Smith, and it's like, no, that's not my name. My name is like Brendan Swift. I don't know an actual name. Both of these are fake.
think back in the 90s, you could have been playing a Kojima game or something.
Yeah.
But you had no clue whatsoever because on the credits it says Hassan Kaharaman.
That's actually like, yeah, that is kind of how it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was especially a thing in Japanese, I believe, developed games where they were just like, we don't want you poaching our workers, so put in a fake name. We know you did it and you will be respected around the office, but also we don't want you getting proper work, so fake name it is.
Oh, yeah. There you go. We had to dig deep to find the negative in that one. We had to look back into video game history.
I'm about to say, yeah, like 30 years ago. Like I said, I don't think it's been an issue in that regard since, of like just fake names. People not being credited is, yeah, probably the more prominent issue. So it's good to see that, yes, a big studio with one of the best and biggest games of the year has said, no, like, we want these people to be recognized for their work and their talent, so let's add their name into the game credits. So it's like, it's great to see.
And it's great to start off the news with a positive story. But we're going to be going right back in the other direction now, because we're going to be talking about Overwatch 2. This article comes out of Game Rant and is written by Dominic Bosniak. Oh, I hope I pronounced that right. Overwatch 2 only took some 48 hours to become the lowest rated game ever released on Steam. It
seized
that...
Congratulations. Well done.
Well done. Good show.
It seized the unenviable title with over 87,000 overwhelmingly negative reviews, dwarfing the 29,000 user ratings attached to the second worst rated Steam game of all time, War of the Three Kingdoms, according to the third party tracker, Steam 250. A notable portion of the ongoing review bombing effort can seemingly be attributed to fan activism against Blizzard's decision to charge a full price for the original Overwatch, only to eventually replace it with an aggressively monetized free-to-play experience that is Overwatch 2. While the first game had a six-year run until its follow-up entered beta, many negative reviews argued that Overwatch 2 is essentially just a more predatory version of the original, bemoaning Blizzard's decision to officially kill Overwatch 1 in October 22 as part of a bid to accelerate the sequel's adoption. Even many of the negative Steam reviews of Overwatch 2 that didn't mention its predecessor took aim at the game's monetization practices, criticizing its Battle Pass model as anti-consumer and hindering to enjoyment. Some Steam users also lambasted Blizzard's scrap plans for PvE content, while others condemned the recently announced Overwatch 2 Season 6 roadmap and the reuse of an old spray cosmetic from the original game as a Battle Pass unlockable. Oh, dearie me, Drew. Things aren't looking too good for Overwatch 2 at the moment. Do you have any familiarity with Overwatch at all? Are you a fan of the series?
No, I played the first one like when it came out, but when it came to Overwatch 2, it was just, I looked at it and went, what are you doing? You're doing the exact same thing. Doing the exact same thing and you're putting a 2 on it. And it's like, oh, well, I guess it will have this... campaign. I'm like, oh, I guess that'd be pretty cool. People have been asking for that for a long time. And then they come and say, oh, we actually can't do that. So, oh, fair enough. Fucking, all right. Well, why'd you even bother? And a lot of this negativity is sort of coming around because I think basically China lost access to it because they, I forgot the company that was basically publishing or allowing the game in.
Was it
Tencent or the... the other one, can't quite remember, sorry. But they were allowing the game to be over there and they broke their partnership. So Chinese players could no longer play Blizzard games. And I think a lot of these reviews were from China. And that was a lot of Chinese players showing their frustration about the game. You know, the fact they can't play it and a bunch of all the, you know, the monetization schemes that they've been using as well. Mm-hmm. Which is why I'd probably never even try playing the game, to be honest with you. But if you're an Overwatch fan and you've got some cash you don't mind chucking around, well, you're going to have a great time. But I don't know. I look at Blizzard and I'm like, what are you doing? Like even like Diablo 4, it's like, oh, that looks great. Then you sort of dig into the money they want from you after you spend a full price. Well, I don't know. I'd rather just... I might go outside, actually.
Touch grass, as the kids say.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure that might be an unpopular opinion if you're a Blizzard fan, but I'm very unfazed. Just whatever, man.
I think Blizzard fans are very much in your camp these days, Drew. Yeah, they're a shadow of their former self. And I know Lockie's a big fan of Blizzard and he doesn't have much nice to say about them these days. And same with shout out to Aaron as well. So yeah, you're in good company there. Mm. And it was NetEase, the company that NetEase, Blizzard was working with at the time.
Makes sense.
So yeah, that's interesting because I know Call of Duty was in China for a while there. Does that mean Call of Duty might not be in China as well because they're all under that same umbrella?
Assume so. Mm. Assume that it's been pulled too. But
yeah, the only thing I was excited for with Overwatch 2 was that campaign, and it was the only thing that really set it apart from Overwatch 1 other than they removed one of the characters. So yeah, they were, I think, went from 5v5 to 4v4.
No, 6v6 to 5v5. Yeah. I played a bit of Overwatch 2. Just to go back to what Drew said, I love how we're treating Activision like a dog who's picked up something on the ground they're not supposed to. What are you doing? What are you doing over there? Stop that. Drop it.
Oh, but it starts rolling in it. You're like, oh, mate, come on.
Oh, no. Oh, put the battle pass
down. You've
got
microtransactions all over you.
Put the battle pass down. Put it down. But no, it's as someone who really enjoyed the original Overwatch, I think I put quite a few hours into that game when I originally played it. And also, quite a lot of money I really shouldn't have just... bad decisions were made in my early 20s. That's all I'm going to say.
Loot boxes, man.
Loot boxes, man.
Yeah, man.
That power over you.
Yeah, they do. I wanted that. Mm. I wanted that skin. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Skin wins, baby.
But yeah, no. Once they announced they were going to close down Overwatch 1 and that you were forced to play Overwatch 2, I did check it out of sheer curiosity. I think I played for maybe a month with some friends of mine, and honestly, it was just like, this is fine. It's the same game again, but in my opinion, worse, because I don't like the 5v5. I think it actually makes play worse, honestly, because I think it takes away important roles or makes it that your team has to now play multiple roles when before you didn't have to, so... it was kind of annoying. And then, yeah, just reusing old assets that were, like, free or easier to get in the original game and then making them paid, but also paid that you have to earn. You can't just buy the fucking thing. You've got to play, like, for 20 hours a day to get your battle pass score up so you can fucking get a spray of Lucio doing a dab, probably. so, like, great. I fucking hate battle pass systems. I really do. It's like, ugh.
I'm not a fan of them either. I think I do prefer them to loot boxes, but I think something has to be said that people are unhappy with the monetization of Overwatch 2.
It's so expensive.
And that's compared to Overwatch 1 was a full price game with loot boxes, but people preferred that to what we have now. So just let that sink in. People want the free to play battle pass bullshit. Ugh. Oh, damn. Oh, dearie me, but we have a lot of games to look forward to in October, and thusly, lots of games have been moving around to try and make room for, from what I can see, mostly for Spider-Man. It seems like that's where everyone's trying to avoid. So, we've had the unusual thing that doesn't happen very often in the games industry, that we've had a title release date move a little bit closer. So, Assassin's Creed Mirage, it was supposed to come out on the 12th of October, is now coming out the 5th of October. So, rather than being a week out from Spider-Man, it's now 2 weeks out from Spider-Man, which sounds like a smart decision to me.
Yeah.
And Alan Wake 2 is moving from the 17th of October to the 27th of October. Now, Ubisoft said that for them, it was just because the game's ready, so that's why they're putting it out a week early, though I don't really buy that. Remedy have said, when it comes to Alan Wake 2, they're moving it because of... They said because of all the games, but, you know, it's because of Spider-Man. I had a look at what's coming out that week. They're not moving it because of Hot Wheels Unleashed 2.
Nah.
No. They're moving it because of Spider-Man 2. That's
Super
sequel.
Mario Wonder comes out the same day as Spider-Man
that
as well.
That too, yeah.
True.
Yeah, there
is a game and a Spider-Man game. Stay away.
Yeah, no.
Stay away.
It's a big day. Big day for releases, yeah. Ooh.
That is going to be a big weekend. Well, Drew, I guess, yeah, you must be happy now that they've made more room for you to play Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Or were you not interested in any of these titles to begin with?
No, I'm in for Spider-Man and Mario, so sucks to be me, I guess. Oh, what a problem I've got. Oh, no, what do I play first? I like to get my PlayStation games physically, so that'll probably be a couple of days later in the post, and I get my Switch games from the eShop, so I'll probably be playing Mario Wonder just through logistics, I guess, but very keen for both, very different games. I've still got to finish Miles Morales, so I have not got around to that
game. It's a pretty quick one. You could probably get through it in a weekend.
Yeah, hopefully. I played it... That's the problem with the Spider-Man games. I just get lost. Well, not lost, but I'm just like swinging around, collecting stuff. And I'm like, oh, that was fun. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, I didn't do any story. I was just too busy just exploring. Oh, yeah. But
do you have any interest in Assassin's Creed Mirage or Alan Wake 2?
A little bit with Assassin's Creed. I've never really gotten into an Assassin's Creed game before. I played a bit of 3. And I played like the start of 3. And I thought that was pretty cool. I'm like, that's fun. I'll put it down.
Yeah.
So, you know, great use of my money and time there. But I am keen just to see the, you know, back to the roots, a bit more of a condensed story, even though it's still like a 30-hour game, apparently. That's still, you know, that's still good value. But when it comes to like the open world stuff being just so bloated, like I don't need a bloated game. I need a refined, a refined game in some ways. So yeah, I'm keen to give it a go, but it might be like a Ubisoft Plus sort of investment, like their subscription service. I got the Rogue Ally, and I was thinking it'd be kind of cool to pick up a month of that, and I'll be able to try out the crew, try out Assassin's Creed. They've got Prince of Persia coming out early next year, so their lineup looks actually pretty neat. But there's nothing for me, because I'm not like a massive fan of any of these series, but I would like to try them, maybe in the subscription service, but. Yeah, no, like $100 investments from me anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's totally fair. And I'd say stay far away from any of the recent Assassin's Creed games if you're not into overbloated titles, because holy shit, the last couple of particularly. How about you, Anthony? Are you going to pick up Mirage?
No. I think I'm going to stick to not playing Assassin's Creed games. It's worked for me so far. I'm sort of interested in Alan Wake 2. I would have to play Alan Wake 1 or the Alan Wake remaster to actually, you know what the fuck's going on so that I can play two and go, oh, this is what's happening. So if I play the first game by the time two comes out, sure, but I am tentatively interested. I just need to play the first game so I actually can care about what's going on.
It's one of those things, man. Like these days, I feel like every time developers make a sequel, they generally will try and make it so you didn't have to play the first one. I'm sure there'll be tons of stuff in there that you can point out and go, oh, I recognize that, or it's the thing from the thing. But other than that, if you're not stressed about that, I'd say screw it. Or, yeah, wait for reviews anyway. Mm. Yeah, look, I'm picking up Assassin's Creed Mirage, but purely because I play every single Assassin's Creed game.
Jesus.
I won't be playing anything else, really, I think, around that time, unless I'll probably still be playing Baldur's Gate 3, seeing what characters I can bang. So, if I need a break from that, then Assassin's Creed Mirage is perfect. But, yeah, look,
reset your palette.
A smaller scope... exactly. It being a smaller scope, I do find a lot more interesting. I think Ubisoft is better when they reduce their scope and just focus on a smaller game but a tighter experience. Mm. But with that being said, I have not been impressed with a Ubisoft title since, I think, Assassin's Creed 2.
Wow. So, oh, God. That's over a decade ago, Zach.
It's a long time ago.
Still.
There might be things about certain games that I'm impressed with, you know. Like, I did enjoy Origins enough, and I did finish all the others, but it's, you know, that I know, it's always like video game popcorn for me. It's never like a nice three-course meal like a Rockstar game or a Naughty Dog game. It's just like, oh yeah, it's a fun time, but I won't be thinking about it a week later. I could not tell you a single thing that happened in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and I played that for 115 hours.
Yeah. Yep. not good.
Good. And yeah, I didn't really like Alan Wake 1. I tried the remaster. Meh, whatever. It's not my cup of tea. It's a bit of an old game and it plays kind of old. The Remedy thing I want, which is in the pipeline, is Control 2. Mm. And I'm excited for that whenever the hell we do finally get a release date for that. But talking about release dates, it's time to talk about the games coming up in the next week. Oh, yeah, I think I mentioned this to you, Drew. The whole reason why people are hearing the little bit of background music that's playing now is because I heard you do that on House of Mario, and I'm like, I'm going to steal that. That's a great idea.
A bit of a jingle, a bit of a bop. Oh.
Yeah, you get a little bit of a tune going. Yeah, we'll relax and hear about the games now. Coming up in the next week, we have Fort Solace coming to PC and PS5. Immortals of Avium coming to PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC. WrestleQuest is coming to all platforms, including iOS. Blasphemous 2 is coming to PS5, Xbox Series X, PC, and Nintendo Switch August 24th. Also, August 24th is Ride 5, coming to PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC. And finally, August 25th, we have Armored Core Fires of Rubicon, coming to all platforms except for Nintendo Switch. Drew, do any of those titles stand out to you?
Yeah, I've had my eye on WrestleQuest for a while. I didn't know it was coming to iOS, so I might actually play it there. That's actually pretty cool. I might actually play it on an iPad. Because, like, I got the iPad, you know, I don't know, a month or so ago, and I'm like, this would be wonderful to play a game on with a controller. It's just I don't want to deal with what's going on, you know, with the mobile market. I don't want to be spending microtransactions and that. And a lot of the games that look pretty neat are either in Apple Arcade or they're nowhere. So I might actually try it on iOS, but Immortals of Avium as well. That looks pretty cool when I saw it at Summer Game Fest. So might see how the reviews go for that one. They could go either way. It could be mediocre or pretty cool, but I'm kind of in the mood for a first-person shootery game. And the magic sort of spin on it looks pretty neat too. So I'm pretty keen to give that a go, but I haven't really looked into it too much. But we'll see when the reviews pop.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Drew. I've pre-ordered Immortals of Avium purely just based on the little snippets that we've seen here and there. Like first person magic use looks like fun. The story looks like trash. The game looks pretty. though.
Yeah, those look pretty.
But you're right, though. It's a real big question mark. I'm not very familiar with the developer who made it. I think it's like their first game, and they're like...
Yeah.
I can't remember if they're like ex-Call of Duty veterans or something like that, but they've got some good talent behind the game, so I'm very curious about that. Mm. Also curious to see how it's going to go competing with Armored Core Fires of Rubicon, the other title that I've pre-ordered that I didn't realize was coming out the exact same week. So I'm going to have a very busy week of games to play next
week.
That's
come up quick.
Yeah. Of course, Armored Core is the newest From Software game. And, you know, it's mechs fighting. What more could you possibly want? Anthony, is that something you want?
It is at the very least something I'm looking at in my pipeline of games to play. I am definitely waiting until I hear something from either you or the general reviewing public, because I think we have the same sentiment of I like FromSoft games. This does not look like a traditional FromSoft game. I do hope that all the robo NPCs have bored British voices though whenever I start their quest line. So they're like, oh, it's you. But they're giant robots. That's all I ask for is giant robots with bored NPC English voices. That's all I ask for in my FromSoft game now.
They're going to get the guy who did the voice. You know, Portal 2, the voice of the thing that you carry around.
Oh, Stephen
with
Merchant?
You.
But he's not bored. He's good. I would like him. We need Peter Dinklage.
He's an actor. He could sound bored if
he wants.
True.
No, we need Peter Dinklage's original performance in Destiny. That, what is it? What is the fucking line about like the witch on the moon or whatever?
That wizard came the from moon. The moon.
So it did?
Oh. Any of those other titles stand out to you at all, Anthony?
Unfortunately, no. I think... these are all, I think, sadly, games I'm going to have to wait till I hear reviews for before I pick up, because none of them are super standing out to me right now, other than Armored Core, because Armored Core. Everything else is I'm definitely going to have to wait for a review before I pick up, because there's too many games this year. I still haven't gone back and finished Tears of the Kingdom. There are so many games I need to play.
Such a short game, too. It won't take you long.
I mean, I've seen those speedruns. All I need to do is fucking bash everything and fly straight into Ganon's asshole, and I think I win the game.
Yeah. Apparently in that game too, like, they've done a speedrun who can have sex with Ganondorf the fastest as well. So
again, straight up the asshole. Straight up. Just use the Zoan devices. Just in.
If Nintendo knew what they were doing, they would have made it so we could romance Prince Sidon. Is that his name?
Sidon, Sidon.
Yeah, Sidon, yep.
They were clearly into each other, let's be real.
Fish sticks, man, fish sticks.
Well, his sister Mipha, she legitimately had a real crush on Link, so it's only natural Link would move on to, you know, a younger brother, you know, when he's Prince, But he does have a partner. He does have a partner, so you don't want to be a home wrecker as well.
Mm. That's true. Hey, maybe there's extra room in the bed for all. Link the Twink is going to get going.
Oh, yes.
Oh, dearie me. Well, look, that'll do us for the games coming up in the next week. Now, there's not a lot of news this week, so we have not been running for long. How about we just power on through and talk about the games that we've been playing? Now, Drew, you are our guest. It is tradition on News to Reviews for a guest to get us kicked off with impressions. What have you been playing this week, my friend?
Yeah, ladies first. Thank you very much. I've been playing a couple of things on my Asus ROG Ally. I got it basically the day it came out, the start of June, but I hadn't had that much experience with it. It took forever to set up because it is a PC. Mm. So I was very much like downloading stuff the first night, you know, putting places. The next night was just putting it into place. The next night was updating BIOS. So it wasn't like a Switch or a PlayStation or anything where you just pick it up and play it. And it reminded me why I never use my PC. Come on, this is so annoying. But I absolutely love how it feels. It's a great sort of handheld PC. And I finally got to the point where I'm like, let's play some games on this bad boy. Had it downloaded, had it ready to go. Because I guess for me also, I just love tinkering. So maybe part of that problem was me. Maybe I could just jump straight into it. But anyway, I finally started using Xbox Game Pass because that's what actually drew me to the ROG Ally over the Steam Deck. Steam Deck, I couldn't just use my Game Pass library. And I like having the integration with Xbox because if I want to play it on the TV with a bit more, I guess, stable, I guess the Xbox, would the Xbox be more powerful? Yeah, it would be more powerful than the ROG Ally. So just to save back and forth, I found it that much easier. And the Steam Deck isn't available in Australia, so that's the next thing. I actually tried to get a Steam Deck a few years ago on eBay, and I got scammed.
So, oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, no. do you mind if I ask, like how?
Oh, well, I saw a Steam Deck, and I said, I'll buy that, and I bought it. And it just never, it said it arrived at my house the next day from the US. I'm like, yeah, right. Probably not. Yeah. So I went to eBay and said, I got scammed. And they said, yeah, no worries, mate. And they gave my money back. Good. So it wasn't too big a deal.
At least you got the money back.
Oh, yeah. No, it was like a $1,200 purchase. So yeah, it wasn't.
Steam Decks are expensive on their own. I'm sure people would have been well overcharging for them at the time, particularly if you're trying to get one in Australia as well too. If you don't mind me asking, what does the Asus ROG Ally run? Is that on Windows 10?
Windows 11. Windows 11. Windows 11. Yeah, so it comes with all the positives and negatives of running on Windows because like, you know, you pick up your Switch, you press the power button, press, you're in. Whereas, you know, Windows, you turn it on, you got to log in. It's got like a fingerprint scanner, so just a little press and you're into it. But it's sort of navigating, and that's a little bit clunky, but it's not too bad once you're into the actual games. So with the ROG, I have this big, powerful console, so I thought I'd play some nice indie platformers. So I started off with Planet of Lana. It's a game that's just on Xbox and PC. And I was drawn to it because it's just got a beautiful art style, sort of hand-drawn, sort of puzzle platformer. And the story is very minimal. It's just very much you interpreting it. I'll compare it to Limbo or something like that, where you're just taking in the environment and the storytelling is just told through the actions of what's going on. And the game starts off, you're just playing with your friend, but then like these aliens come down in big like metal spaceships and capture everybody in your village and take off. And throughout the game, you're looking to try and save your family and your friends. And it's just an absolutely great experience. Like the soundtrack just blew me back. I was playing in bed with headphones and there were some moments where like, I was like, whoa, it's just captivating just with what I'm seeing, with what I'm hearing. And it was just an experience that really blew me back. But the actual gameplay itself is you're, you know, doing like little puzzles along the way. A lot is done with stealth, getting past enemies. And there's probably only one or two where, you know, you've got to like line up certain things and do some more traditional types of puzzles. But a lot of it's sort of stealth, getting past enemies. You do that with, you got like a little cat, monkey, animal, which you're able to like use to distract and open up doors. And you're able to manipulate some of the alien species as well. If you get close enough to them.
Oh, that's cute. I'm always down for a little furry companion in games.
Yeah. No, it's adorable. It's like a little, in the game with the art style, it's like a little black blob almost with like two little eyes you can just see beating out of it. But yeah, very cute. I think what impressed me so much was like in the middle of the game, the game's only about 4.5 hours. So, you know, it's a nice sit down. I played it just in one sitting in bed. And there's a set piece where the camera just zooms right out. And this song just plays for about 4 minutes as you're like taking in all the scenes. And it just blew me back. I'm like, this is awesome. It's like probably like one of my favorite songs of the year, just in general. So it's awesome. The soundtrack's on Apple Music and Spotify. So if you want to go and check out the Planet of Lana soundtrack, I'll probably recommend that. If you're not interested in playing it, just go and check out the soundtrack. It's really, really awesome. And I loved how the story sort of ended up too. It's very... very heartwarming story. Yeah. So go and check it. It's on Game Pass, so not much of a investment if you've already got the subscription.
Look, everything you've been saying has been ticking all the boxes for me. Like, Game Pass, no-brainer, 100%. But Limbo, oh, love me some Limbo. That was so good. And when I played Limbo, it was one of those titles where I didn't realize games could be like that. The way it would surprise you as the game unravels was just bit of a life-changing experience for me, in that I just didn't realize that that's what video games could be. With Planet of Lana, did you find that with the puzzles, were they giving you that sort of feeling where you're completing a puzzle and just thinking, oh, it never occurred of me to think that way?
Yeah, I don't know if the puzzles like blew me away. There were a handful of puzzles that had me like, oh, what do I do? I'll put the blame on this anyway. It was late at night. I wrapped up the game about 1 o'clock in the morning. So by the end, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Sort of like trying to work it out. Like my brain's just dead. But I'm like, I don't want to come back and just do the last 20 minutes of the game and just have it. That'll be a weird sit down. But the puzzles were interesting because some had me stumped because like the enemies, like they're like these spider robots for a lot of them. And there's different mechanics where you can like crouch in the grass. They can't see you. They jump over you. You move past to the next bit of grass where you can hide. But you can use your little companion to distract them. And then you get to the other side of the screen, but you've got to bring your companion back without being seen. So then they can open the door to progress. And there was a certain puzzle where I was thinking to myself, like, how do I get it back without it being seen, because I could get myself there, but I couldn't get my companion there to then open the door and progress. So there was some puzzles like that that had me a little bit stumped for a little while. And I actually recorded my gameplay, and looking back at it the next day, I was like, well, Jesus Christ, I spent a bit of time on that puzzle. it's one of my favorite games of the year. It's just the soundtrack is what really put it up there for me, just with its aesthetics as well. And that's a really special game, published by Fundful. So great to see those guys, be able to publish such a cool game. They're a part of the publishing team that did like the SteamWorld games, like SteamWorld Dig, all those types of things. So they just do great games in general. So it's great to see just another great game come from their publishing label.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Look, it's cool to see a game like this come around because, Limbo was 2010, and then Inside, not a sequel, but, you know, it's like just their next title, but a very similar kind of art style and feel, was 2016, and oh, God, Inside was absolutely fantastic as well. I absolutely adored that game, and so this is really ticking all the boxes for me. I've got to give it a try. I'll be able to play this on my PC as well too. I'm not going to need something that powerful to play it, which my PC is not that strong. So this looks like this is a definite download for me, especially with the soundtrack. A big part of these sort of 4-hour experiences is the visuals and the audio, and this sounds like it's ticking all the boxes. Sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a review score for Planet of Lana?
I reckon 4 out of 5. That's because throughout the year, I'm basically, when I finish a game, I quickly go to my GG app, which is an app where you can like just share quick reviews and do game lists and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I usually go to my phone and do a quick like little review. I'm like, oh, what did I think of this game? So at the end of the year, I can then go back and have a look what I actually finished and played. So when I was doing that, I'm like 4 out of 10. It was just, it was perfect length, beautiful game, awesome soundtrack, puzzles that captivated me. There really wasn't any downsides to it. Maybe if you're not into that type of experience, you want a bit more action. But apart from that, yeah, man, it was just perfect, especially on Game Pass. I am curious if, I'm not sure how much it actually costs if you just want to buy it on Steam or Xbox outright. I didn't pay for it like that, so I can't judge it like that.
No, totally fair. Well, I am downloading Planet of Lana right now.
Oh, damn.
As if I didn't.
You and your Sydney internet, you can download games and podcasts at the same time.
That's right. Okay.
Crazy.
do you have anything left to say on Planet of Lana?
No. Yeah, just a great game. I just want more people to play it, especially since it's so accessible. Mm. So definitely go and check it out.
Well, guess what, Drew? Apparently, I already had it downloaded and installed. I just hadn't played it all yet. Right. So there you go. Don't even have to download it. Just try to open up because I was clicking around. All righty, you beauty.
This bloody dingus.
You silly Billy.
Now, before we get on to what else you've been playing, Drew, I just wanted to touch on what I was talking about last week, which was Atlas Fallen. So I've had a lot more time with it now. I think I was only like 4 hours in when I played it last time. A lot of the stuff I said before still stands. There's a couple of like little corrections here or there. I mentioned Andrew was asking me whether or not it's open world. It is open world, but there's multiple world maps. So it's not just one big open world. You start off in one map, then there's like a sort of smaller map, dungeonish almost sort of area, then you have a whole another second map that you come to, and then another area towards the end. Now I haven't finished it yet, but I'm from the way the story's going, it seems like I'm quite close now. If you've looked into Atlas Fallen, I think it's safe to say that everything you've heard about it is true. The story's trash. The open world's pretty dead. Yeah, it's not a lot going on. It's definitely like a bit of a janky AA budgeted game, though. But I knew that's what I was in for. But regardless of that, I've still been having a lot of fun with it. Would I recommend Atlas Fallen to people? Probably not, because I know that the chance of people enjoying it as much as what I have is pretty slim. I think it was very much a right place, right time for this game. I wanted something to play with my mate Hunter. Haven't been able to play a game with him in ages. This came out. It's got this cool traversal mechanic where you're gliding through the sand. I'm in. And yeah, all that stuff's fun. The combat's great. The traversal's great. Sliding through the sand is excellent. The upgrades are all fun. I would say it probably is a little bit on the short side compared to similar titles. So if you're playing an open world co-op game, you're probably expecting, especially if it's, I guess this one's not, it's kind of loot based, but especially if it's loot based, you're expecting to play probably like 20 to 30 hours, something like that. You want like a pretty hefty experience. We're approaching the end and we're at about 12 hours in. We've done a bit of the side stuff. We've probably done about half of it, but there's still a fair bit there left to do. I'd imagine it's probably going to be once, if you do all the side stuff, like a 20-hour title. So yeah, don't expect this to be eating up tons of your time. If it had ended where I thought it was going to end last week, I probably would have been a little bit disappointed, but it seems like the game's still got a bit to go. Yeah, look, if the hack and slash looks fun to you, if the open world design looks fun to you, if you've got a friend to play it with, I'd say maybe it's one to check out, but hang on to your receipt just in case it doesn't vibe for you, because I definitely recognize that this isn't for everyone. The combat can be a little bit finicky sometimes. I'm not a fan of the targeting system. It does the, you know, the R3 thing where you can toggle onto a target and then mix up the targets, but I find it has a really hard time of selecting the right target when you're trying to flick between them. And that's a lot because you can have multiple enemies on the screen, and some enemies, the bigger enemies, have multiple spots where you can hit them that all have their own separate targeting. So things can get a little bit complicated there. And something that the game does, which shits me to no end, is pretty much every single boss or larger enemy has little minion enemies that it can summon. So you're fighting the boss, you're having a great time, you're like, yeah, let's go, and then all of a sudden it spits out these two little minions and you got to fight those and get them out of the road before you can just keep fighting the bigger enemy, and once you kill them it will get rid of the minions, but it is a pain in the ass to try and fight one of these bigger enemies when you got the two little minions coming at you. I unlocked an ability which lets me just kill the minions immediately, which, you know, it's great to be able to do that, but also now I can't use another cool ability because I'm having to use this to get rid of the minions. So
that's such a little bit of a
nitpick for me, like especially if you're not a fan of flying enemies, then definitely do not play this game because like probably about half of the enemies are in the air.
Yeah, you do this like this awkward jump. Like an old man trying to do volleyball, trying to do a spike.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that. And like one of the weapons is a whip, which you can use to pull yourself into enemies, which is super handful with the flying enemies. But I find there is still a bit of jank to that there. Like you'll get pulled towards it, but if you're slightly too far away, then your next attack's not going to land. Yeah, it's a bit funny. And speaking on the enemies, the enemy variety just in general is quite lacking. They're all the same visual design. They're like these sand monsters, which I actually think is kind of cool, though you do get a bit bored seeing the same visual style of enemies throughout the entire game. But for the minions, I think there was only like 3 to 4 different kinds of smaller enemies. And then the bigger enemy seems to be where the more of a focus is on, but I've probably come across about 6 or 7. So, yeah, 10 enemy types for a big open world game where the focus is on the combat. Yeah, probably not the greatest. So, funnily enough, I know I've said a lot of stuff here that sounds quite negative, but I'm still having a great time with it. It's a fun time for me, Zach, this guy sitting here recording the podcast. For everyone else, yeah, I'd say be very tentative if you want to dip your toes into Atlas Fallen. It'd probably be one that I'd wait for a sale on. But yeah, lads, do we have any...
Sounds like a great sale game.
100%. It's one of those ones. Why is this not on Game Pass? I do not know. Mm. Put it on Game Pass. Put it on PS Plus extra with cheese. That's where this game sort of belongs. Do either of you lads have any questions about Atlas Fallen before we move on?
Yeah, I'll
you go first, Drew.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I have any questions, but my first exposure to this game was actually just going through EB Games and seeing it on there. I'm like, what is this game? Like, I follow the games industry relatively closely. I'm like, what is this? I was a little bit confused because I'm like, is this like... Immortals of Avium? It kind of looked a little bit similar just at first blush. I looked at the gameplay. I'm like, it looks pretty. I might be interested in it. But I'm hearing that it's just, you know, it's okay, which is fine. Not every game has to be just a world-breaking, revolutionary experience. Sometimes you can just have a game where you hit things and have fun with your friends. Mm. And that sounds great for that. But yeah, I hope you continue having fun with it and you get it finished.
I will finish it. Hunter and I are definitely going to finish. I might even platinum it because it's, you know, the open world stuff is, you know, it's brain dead, mindless, whatever, but it'll be great to play beautiful. While I put on a podcast or a YouTube video or something like that, which I absolutely love to do.
But yeah, I don't really have any questions outside of, I guess, like... Is there a lot of change in, like, the design of the world? Because you said there wasn't a lot of, like, big open worlds, I guess. So, is a lot of the same visual design because of all the sand and stuff, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Very much so. Mm. So, they do distinguish the areas apart a little bit from each other, but because of the traversal being... sand-based in that you have to be on sand in order to use the sand glide, then there is sand everywhere, which does sort of make a lot of the areas look kind of similar.
And makes them look coarse, makes them look rough, makes them look irritating, and it's getting everywhere.
Oh, yes. Anakin, not a fan of this game at all. Do not mention it to him. But... funnily enough, I love the traversal so much that, you know, there's an area where there's like a swamp and it does change up the visual style. But I'm like, fucking, I can't do the sand glide here. Why am I here?
Get me out of here. Get me out of this dank hellhole.
Exactly. I would be listening to Shrek and getting the fuck out of his swamp because I want to use this. That is for sure. But yeah, look, I'll... leave my review score on Atlas Fallen next week once I do complete the game, but I think that's pretty much all I have left to say on it. Anthony, have you been playing anything you want to talk about this week?
No. I am very bad at playing games at the moment. I am mostly catching up on games that I played. Mainly, I'm also just playing Street Fighter VI and other fighting games still, so I have not really picked up anything new, and I have not picked up anything that I've made substantial progress in. So no, I have no thoughts. Brain empty, no thoughts.
Do you sometimes like get into gaming ruts where you just like, all right, I need to play something, and you want to play, obviously, because it's your hobby, but do you sometimes feel like, oh, look, it's just hard to get into it? Sometimes you might just, oh, God. I've been watching YouTube for 2 hours. Damn it. And I don't know. That's what I get like. So I've been like that, and that's why I've picked up a couple of smaller games just to try and get back into it a little bit. And over the last week as well, I've been wanting to play Stray Gods. And I started playing it like 10 o'clock at night and I fell asleep. Yeah. You know, living the dad life, I think.
Yeah. But, I think it is a little bit of that maybe where maybe I need to play more small games and not these 100-plus hour, like, all right, we're halfway through the game. I still don't know what's going on. Let's keep going. It's going to get better. Like that, smaller game experience.
Where are you with Tears of the Kingdom? You said you've
not
still got to go
very
back and finish
far.
That.
I didn't get very far because I was playing it pretty frequently up until Street Fighter VI came out, which was like a week or two later, I think. And I just fucking dropped it so hard. Just was like, I'm that one. It's that one scene from The Simpsons where the lamb tries to come back in. Out of the way, you! Just pushes it out of the way. Just, I don't have time for you anymore. I got Street Fighters to be doing. Yeah. So, yeah.
And that's why some of those games are so popular. You know, Fortnite, Call of Duty. Because you can just jump into it with no strings attached and just play a game. Yeah. And catch up with your friends. It's just all sort of linked into one, whereas, you know, getting back into like Tears of the Kingdom or these like big games, it's like such a big thing. You got to learn how to play it again.
Oh, yeah. Well,
especially like Tears of the Kingdom, you got to sort of think, how do I control Ultra Hand and the button combinations and how do I pick up and throw things? Like, it's a bit to pick
up.
I'm going
to come back into this game and I'm going to be like, why can't I fucking uppercut and throw fireballs at these assholes? Doesn't make any sense. Game. Makes sense. Where's game.
Where's Link's whirlwind kick? What the hell? Did you make it off the initial island? Are you still?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I got well off the island. I was exploring the main world and like finding not settlements, but like finding new areas and all that. But I hadn't progressed in the story at all because I never do in these kind of games. I fuck around for 50 hours and I'm like, oh, right, the story. And then it's like...
Are you much of a fan of Zelda?
I have literally only played, I think, 3 or 4 games, and the only one I finished is Breath of the Wild. I'm not a huge Zelda guy. Just it wasn't... Yeah. Never had a GameCube as a kid, never had a Game Boy with Zeldas on them. Wasn't going to play any of the DS games with Zeldas, so never came into my like periphery.
I would love to see what you think of the story if you ever get around to getting there and playing it, because the story was you know, it's not the aspect of the game that's talked about a lot. It's about the open world and Ultra Hand and stuff like that, but the story blew me away. But I'm a massive Zelda
fan
as well.
I did hear a lot of people enjoyed the story over Breath of the Wild, and I'm a little forgiving of Breath of the Wild's story, even though it is like, nothing. But I'm more forgiving of it.
It has a great story. It's just how it's told to you.
I think it's...
Over the course of 100 hours and 2-minute cutscenes here and there,
and
you know, it's not going to sink
take
in.
Take photos of shit and it's like, Link!
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. It's like, now it all makes sense.
Because you can imagine in like the course of Link's adventure, and has like these slight flashbacks to like Zelda being grumpy at him. He's just thinking to himself, the fuck was that? And then he just continues on with his journey.
In the middle of like swinging a rock, like to make it fly into the sky. It's like, wait, what did she say? Link, don't fling rocks. It's like, nah. Fling the rock. Nah.
Like a toddler. Yeah. Like a toddler just getting around it. And stuff your mum.
You can't tell me what to do. Just runs away. but yes. No, I haven't played anything, and we have now spent more time talking about a game that I haven't played much of.
It's all right. There's always plenty to talk about with Tears of the Kingdom. That game Indeed. Is so huge with just so much interesting stuff going on in there. And yeah, you're right. The story, Drew, whew, that's some good stuff. I was not a fan of the story in Breath of the Wild, so I had very low expectations when it came to Tears of the Kingdom. And yeah, God, that I won't say twist, but yeah. there's something in there that I thought was very interesting and I have not seen done in a title before, and I thought was really, really cool.
I had a sore jaw. My jaw was open that wide. I was like, oh.
It was cool. It was such a cool reveal. Absolutely loved it. Though I got it at a really weird time based on how Tears of the Kingdom tells its story. Anyway, speaking
let's talk about it later,
of
off air.
Games that we enjoy, Drew, what else have you played this week?
I played Vemba, which is also on Game Pass. Ooh. And I probably really recommend you play this on Game Pass. It's an hour and a half game. And I think that's a great length for what it is, but it is like a $22 game as well.
Okay.
And realistically, you can't... I don't see how you can, as an indie studio, you could charge less than that for a game, even though it's a short game. And it benefits from being a short game. It's a narrative being taught to you. So, you know, you don't want it to go for 5 hours necessarily. But Vemba, it's a story about cooking Indian cuisine. And when I first heard about it, that sounds interesting, sounds different. But it's mainly like a story that's being told to you. It's about immigrants from India to Canada and how this couple is, you know, managing to stay afloat so they don't get, you know, sent back to India. And the story of them starting a family from, you know, having their son, and their son goes through growing up in Canada, and he's got heritage back in India that he's sort of separated from. And the whole story is basically about him finding his culture through his mother's cooking throughout the journey. And the gameplay is putting together these ingredients to make these meals as you go throughout. And you're following like a cookbook, but in the cookbook, sometimes some ingredients aren't listed. They're like scribbled out, or there's some smudges that's happened throughout the years. It's a very worn cookbook. So you're putting together these ingredients. You've got to do it in the right order. And for the most part, it's relatively simple. You use some common sense. If you've cooked before, you know, you've got to put the oil in before you put, you know, the other things into the thing so the pan doesn't stick. And it's just a really great experience. And what I really liked about the cooking was just the sounds that are coming from it. I think these two games I'm talking about today, I must have been wearing better headphones because I'm like, wow, this sounds great. But really, like the sizzling of the pan, like the cracking of the oil as it's cooking, like I could just sort of smell it as I'm playing it. Even though it's a very cartoony animated game, I'm just looking at these bubbling curries and hearing what it sounds like and looking at it. I'm like, God damn. Once again, it was like 12 o'clock at night. I'm like, I could go with a goddamn curry right now. I could smash a curry.
What's open?
But yeah, what's open? Nothing. I'm in a small town. Literally nothing. We've got a great Indian place here, though. It's awesome.
Yeah, doubt they're open till midnight, though. That's for sure.
No. They are open to 9, but maybe I need to play Vemba a little bit early in the day. I would have smashed some butter chicken and some naan bread if it was open by the time I finished the game. But yeah, it's just a really nice story, in and out type of thing. Very unique and different with the gameplay, and the story was the standout. It was just a really nice personal experience with this family that is dealing with certain problems, whether it's racism or, you know, their son not wanting to really adapt to their culture and pushing away from it. And as a dad as well, it was pretty relatable on that respect. Like, it's, you know, obviously I'm not from India. Well, not to be obvious, I, you know, got a darker skin or whatever, but it is just an absolutely great game to play on Game Pass. That's all I've really got to say about it. But okay. I'll probably give this one like a 3 out of 3.5 stars.
Okay.
Purely because maybe just, I don't know, the price isn't so bad. I think it's worth it, but I know a lot of people might poo-poo it, like, oh, it's too short, and people that would refund it on Steam because it's only an hour and a half as well. That's a,
ooh.
I don't know, you know, stuff like that. It's a little bit, a little bit dangerous. And I hate people that say that, like, you know, the game's too short. It's like, I really don't need Vember to be an 8-hour game. Like, it was great just to sit there and play it and get that story. It's like a movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like a movie experience, but you're interacting with it a little bit, and I'd rather probably the team moves on and does a Vember 2 or something completely different and has another hour and a half experience. And that's what Game Pass is perfect for, having these like bite-sized experiences. You can do like one a night, essentially, and it's great for that. And I wish sort of Microsoft themselves actually did that. Instead of having like, all right, the next Halo is going to be a $200 million game, just give us like a nice 5-hour experience and really make it refined and awesome. But that's a massive tangent from where I was.
I can get where you're coming from. It's the quality over quantity argument, and I think it's very important for... I think an indie game like this, it's good that they didn't stretch themselves too thin, like, you know, making an unnecessarily long story. Like, you don't need to, span this out for 5 to 6 hours or more telling the story that is can be told in a shorter time and probably better told if you focus on the elements, probably like, you know, the sound design, making that all sound as good as it can, art design, music, whatever else, the gameplay, what little there may be though. But like focusing in on that, I think, is a lot smarter than, you know, stretching yourself out, as we see with other, usually bigger games rather than indie games. You usually see it's the AAA studios that have all the money in the world and can focus and integrate and do whatever they need to that are always like, yeah, but just make it bigger.
See, I like the idea of them sticking to the sort of scope that they can handle. My issue with the game that this reminded me of is, which was Chia, a game that came to PlayStation earlier on this year. Now, it reviewed quite well. I didn't really understand why. It was a game that I found it looked like it was made with a lot of passion and love and a lot of respect for the culture that it was based in. But the game itself wasn't very good. It was like it was trying to do an open world Breath of the Wild style thing, but it was just clear that the scope was just outside of what they were able to do. Whereas this sounds like, you know, they've decided they want to tell a story where the focus is on the culture and whatnot, but they've focused on something that they can actually do, which is like a cooking mini game. Now, you mentioned the story as a lot going on there. How do they tell the story? Is there there cutscenes in between the scenes where you're doing the gameplay and you're cooking, or is it like a visual novel? How does that work?
Yeah, I'll say there's cutscenes. You could compare it to a visual novel, but it is all animated and moving as you're going on. Okay. It's all text, so there's no voice acting. And as you're going through, you've got like choices out of different answers you can give, but it's not going to change the story. It is just going to give a little bit of different dialogue.
Okay.
But it was cool too, because I think there was like achievements for playing the game. Like if you get like the recipe on the first go without mucking it up for each one. And I think there was an achievement as well for mucking it up. I don't know if that was on every single one, but I noticed one popped when I messed it up. So I, like, you know, I mess up a recipe, even you got an achievement pop. I'm like, yeah, I'm winning.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Dopamine hit for failure. Yeah. Go me. But yeah, it was very much just like sit back and, you know, you're reading, then you're chucked into the mini game of the cooking and then you're back to the story. And yeah, I really like these sort of visual sort of storytelling within video games. I guess you could compare it more to like a interactive story rather than a game itself, but sort of a blurry line these days. It's all much of the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned achievements there. I can see the trophy difficulty for this one's 2 out of 10. So it sounds like it's a pretty easy platinum.
Oh, you're onto
1 to 3 hours to play it. So, oh no, you've said all the things that leads to me buying a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a great story and easy platinum. Why not? Why not, Zach?
I think, look, if I'm being real, I'd be buying this purely for the platinum, and $23 just for a platinum trophy is probably a little bit much. But hey, if this can't, it's on Game Pass, and if this comes to PS Plus Extra at some stage, then that's almost a guarantee for me.
Perfect.
Sounds very cool. Yeah. Anything left to say on Vember?
No, I think I covered it. I think.
Nice. Well, that'll do us for news to reviews for another week, Drew. Thank you so much for joining us. That was a lot of fun.
It was. Yeah, no, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me and your audience tolerating me as well. That's
you're going to get destroyed in the reviews, Drew. Oh, that one guy who really likes Aaron is going to fucking destroy you.
We want Chili Willy. We want
Chili Willy.
No, Drew, it's always great to get you on the show. We'll have to make sure we don't leave it as long between episodes, hopefully. I know you're a busy lad. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Please remind the peeps where they can find your wonderful podcast and anything that you put out onto the interwebs.
Yeah, so the House Mario and Nintendo podcast on podcast services, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And if you want the video stuff from me, you can go to youtube.com/iDruby, where there's clips from the show, there's the podcast and unboxings and other videos that I do there. So go and check out the YouTube channel if you like.
Oh, yes. Get amongst it. And something else you can get amongst is all of Anthony's content from What Do You Think About This? Anthony, do your thing.
So you could find What Do You Think About This, a podcast I do with my friend Jaden, over wherever good podcasts are sold. You can also find us over at WDYTAT Pod on, I called it Twitter earlier, X, where you can repost and like my stuff and message me. Does message have a dumb new name now? Is it Zessages? Can I not send a message anymore? Do I have to Zessage someone? Fucking ugh. Anyway,
you can Zessage me if you like.
That's where you can find us. If you want to talk to us, if you want to come on an episode, if you want us to come on one of your episodes, hit us up.
Oh, yes, and you'll find all of Drew's and Anthony's links in the description of the podcast down below, as well as all of News to Reviews links. But if you want to help out any of those podcasts or any podcast that you enjoy, the best way you can help them out is by leaving a rating or review wherever you happen to be listening to it. It's the freest and easiest way that you can help your favorite podcaster. Anthony, it is that time again when I put my co-host on the spot. Do you have any final words of wisdom for us this week?
Nope. I can't even think of a good joke.
That's all right. Get on X and do a repost of our stuff and follow.
I can't wait for the two millionaires to box each other in the metaverse or whatever the fuck they're doing.
Oh my God, that's not going to happen.
That is not going to happen.
And if it did happen, Zuckerberg would obviously murder him because
I was about to say, I feel like this is actually a good thing. Maybe, oh no, someone filled Zuck's boxing glove with cement. Who could have seen this coming? Oh no, Elon's not moving. What a shame. Oh well, let's all move on with our days.
Well, hopefully they're planning on, this is what they're saying anyway, yeah. So take it with a grain of salt because they're billionaire fucking, what are you called?
Idiots.
Grifters.
Oh. Yeah, grifters.
They want to do it in the Colosseum. So maybe the Colosseum will collapse and, you know, it'll be terrible to lose that piece of history. Would it be worth it?
Maybe.
Maybe. Who's to say?
Who's to say?
Anyway. Oh. Jesus Christ.
This is all parody. We are not. Yes, we are not. We are not claiming go kill these people. Oh, we are not. This is all parody. This is all satire. We are not. We are not promoting the deaths of people. Please don't hold us accountable.
I'll end it on a light note. No. I was looking into a paddock the other day, and I saw a horse sleeping on its side. And I always thought horses slept standing up.
But no. It was on its side. They can sleep on their side, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, there you go. Wine's blown.
I think it's cows that sleep standing up.
No, they don't.
That's that whole cow tipping thing, which isn't real.
Mm. Well, there you go. If you're listening to this and you are a horse, you can sleep on your side. Don't be scared.
Is it same your statistics, how many horses listen to the show?
Oh, yeah, it is one of our lower demographics, that's for sure.
Yeah, but they say
reviews, please talk more about hay.
but they say that a horse that listens to News to Reviews is more likely to get into Harvard than a horse that doesn't.
Yeah. Never look a News to Reviews horse in the mouth. I don't know. And everyone out there, please, take care of yourselves and take care of one another.
No.